Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for checking out the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and I am joined by NCAA Championship Selection Committee Chair Heather Like on the evening of Selection Sunday, the bracket, the 18-team NCAA Men's Division I Lacrosse Tournament bracket has been revealed, and it's always one of the most exciting nights of the year for college lacrosse fans, and certainly we are appreciative of Ms. Like for joining us on the podcast. And to start things off, one of the things that I was very interested in following over the course of this spring was the fact that you had taken over for Jim Sidlitsky, who had established a what I would call a pretty clear kind of standard operating procedure for the committee over the last couple of years. And so I was curious to see, you know, how you kind of perpetuated that or to say it another way, maybe blazed a new trail. And one of the things that I was going to have a particular eye on was what this particular committee taste for regular season rematches was going to be, because it was one of those things that I always kind of thought that maybe it was a little bit of an unwritten rule to try to avoid them, but you know, at the expense of what? And so for the first round field to have three regular season rematches, I think that lacrosse fans were not necessarily surprised, but interested in it. So I suppose it's a two-part question, and the first part is, what would you try to do in terms of forming your own kind of thing? And then also, secondly, what was the committee's attitude towards regular season rematches?
Sure. Well, thanks, Terry, for having me. You know, I would say, first of all, it's been a pleasure and an honor to serve on this selection committee, and I've worked alongside some just outstanding people. You know, my first year I worked with was Tony Seaman, and he was phenomenal as a leader and as a chair of our committee, and really set the tone. And then Jim, having some consistency, being the chair for the next 2 years, we did develop, you know, a pretty very methodical way of studying the numbers, and you know, obviously the criteria has remained consistent, and I think because of that, you know, the consistency of our analysis and our review of the material has remained consistent as well. And you know, we do look at the whole body of work and the resumes of every single program, and you know, break it down by categories from win-loss record and strength of schedule, RPI, you know, the record against the four quadrants and the average RPI wins and losses, and head-to-head and common opponents and significant wins and losses. I mean, those are all studied in depth. So I feel like we've been very consistent with the previous years that I've been a part of the committee, and that's really important for us. As far as the first round matchups, you know, in an ideal world, yes, we would love to avoid, you know, we've really focused a lot on in-conference matchups the most, because, you know, if you've played the team within your conference, you know, sometimes two times, this could be the third meeting. But so we try to avoid those if at all possible at first. And then the second area, you know, we do is actual, just regular season matchups. But it, you know, we do have limitations. There's only 18 spots, and, so we have limitations and have restrictions a little bit on, fiscal, you know, responsibility, which we always try to be. And so, there were some matchups that will be interesting to watch this, first round.
That's very true. I don't think very many folks are complaining about having the opportunity to see Albany take on Cornell again. One of the things you just mentioned was about the fiscal aspect of things, and last year the ability to get three flights. What was the kind of current directive from the NCAA as it related to being, you know, prudent with the finances, and particularly as it related to the flight issue?
You know, I think it's again the same message we have heard from the NCAA, in which we all understand the importance of our responsibility to maintain fiscal responsibility and try to keep bracket integrity. You know, we spend a lot of time, 2 days analyzing this information, and so to maintain bracket integrity as much as possible is really important. And this is probably one of the best years that we've been able to do that, as far as 1-8, and then what we kind of think of as 9-14, really.
Understood. One of the things that you mentioned and seemed to be a very clear differentiating factor in terms of some of the hinge points, some of the difficult decisions, were about head-to-head matchups. How did How did that kind of unfold in the room? What were the conversations like, and did that end up being kind of a deciding factor?
Yes, you know, I will tell you, first of all, you know, the parity and the growth of the sport has been really exciting to watch. And what's interesting this year, there's oftentimes where the teams that you're analyzing or you're kind of whittling it down to one or two teams and you're trying to draw any significant distinction between the two of them, and oftentimes they don't play each other. So you can't always use head-to-head competition. So that's one factor that, you know, sometimes doesn't even get into play because they don't play each other. I will say right off the bat when we looked at Notre Dame and Syracuse, they were probably so the most close comparison in my 4 years of any two teams, because they were just there was just such little differentiation between their numbers. And so, you know, we did look at Notre Dame having a 4-0 record in the ACC, and then Syracuse obviously winning the conference championship was very strong. You know, just two very solid top 20 resumes at 8-2 and 7-2, and just so strong across the board. But when we did analyze, the one thing they had was they had played together, you know, had played against each other in a double overtime win. So again, you can see how talented both teams are and how close they are, evenly matched. But we did give the nod to Notre Dame since they did win that head-to-head competition.
In addition to the number one overall seed, which is obviously a very interesting and sought-after decision that the committee makes, another one is the teams that are included and the teams that are not, at least as it relates to the at-large conversation. Is it fair to interpret that Brown was the last team in, and that Princeton and Georgetown were the two teams that were closest to inclusion that were in consideration for an at-large spot?
Yes, that is a very fair analysis.
And what were the deciding factors in that? I mean, obviously, as it relates to Brown and Princeton, head-to-head comes into play once again.
Yeah, head-to-head did come into play. I'll just, you know, speak real quickly to Georgetown. They were the highest RPI team that did not make it. And, you know, they were given great consideration, a very, very solid season as far as their scheduling, their strategy, you know, who they played. But, you know, they played some of the best teams. And unfortunately, just did not have any wins in the top 15. And so that kind of hurt them the most. But between Brown and Princeton, yeah, you know, the Ivy League, as I may have mentioned, is just, as a league, they were just incredibly even at the very top. And Brown had a very solid record at 12-4, 12 wins, strong winning percentage. They had a slight edge in the RPI. But there was, again, such slight differentiation between the two of them. Both teams had their strongest wins were both over Cornell, which was the number 9 seed. So, you know, again, we went to the head-to-head competition. Sometimes teams play each other, sometimes they don't. And Brown did happen to beat Princeton during the regular season. And so, you know, we gave them the deciding factor to put Brown in the tournament.
And then the last question that I have as it relates to the bracket in particular is just about kind of that hinge point in terms of who gets to host. And so, you know, Cornell-Albany, another game that was a rematch from the regular season, which the Big Red won in Texas, will be in Ithaca this time around. Short jaunt for the Great Danes, but certainly, you know, the faithful of the Purple and Gold were, I think, hoping to see their team in the Capital Region once again. What, or at least one more time, what was the deciding factor in terms of that decision?
Cornell, I mean, again, studying everybody's total body of work was a critical factor. We felt that their strength of schedule was significantly better than Albany. You know, their strength of schedule ended up being a 7. Albany was a 30. Cornell did not have any bad losses. And again, head-to-head, they did beat Albany. And we think that's going to be a tremendous matchup as well, and look forward to seeing what happens there.
Well, you mentioned obviously looking forward to seeing what happens, and I think that that's kind of the question that I want to leave you with. It's very simple, and now that I don't want to say that the work is done, but, you know, the teams are on the lines, so you can
right.
A little bit lean back and see how it all unfolds. How much, as having been a member of this committee for a couple of years now, how enjoyable do you find the process to be?
Oh, you know, we absolutely, it is very rewarding, not just because of the people on the committee that you get to work with, but I would tell you that the coaches and the quality of the people that you get to interact with along the way, the coaches that you get to meet, they are just all in it for the right reasons. They coach because of the quality of the student and athlete that they are developing, and the young people that are in their program. It's been a blessing to, you know, from the time that you get to the Final Four and you go to the banquet and the, you know, just how they handle themselves and appreciate what's being done for them, the way they give back to the community that we usually go to and work together. So it's really rewarding. It's been a privilege to be a part of it. And, you know, we look forward to, you know, healthy competitions and great competitions. And, it is exciting to see what happens. And it is one of the things the committee looks at and studies. You know, we do go back and analyze what happened and how it all unfolded. So it'll be an exciting, couple weekends here leading up to Memorial Day weekend.
Well, Heather, like, we really appreciate all the work that went into putting together the NCAA tournament field. Like I said, it's something that lacrosse fans look forward to all season long. We've certainly hashed and rehashed a number of times, and now it's an opportunity for us as lacrosse fans to lean back and enjoy the action. So we really appreciate your time on the podcast. You're running us through the decision-making processes, and enjoy some sleep. I know that it's a long weekend for you guys.
Terry, thanks so much, and thanks for your coverage and promoting this awesome sport. So thanks. I appreciate being involved.
Absolutely. Take care. And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Colgate head coach Mike Murphy, whose Raiders are Patriot League champions and heading to Chapel Hill to take on the number 3 seed North Carolina Tar Heels. And Coach Murphy, you know, first of all, congratulations on a tremendous season. I'm curious as to what your level of pride is for your team to have gotten to this point, because it just strikes me that, you know, there were teams that in your league kind of attracted a fair amount of attention at different points throughout the season. And for whatever reason, and maybe I'm just speaking from my own personal bias, it kind of felt like Colgate throughout much of the year flew under the radar until the second last weekend of the regular season. And then all of a sudden, boom, you're in the tournament, and people are like, wow, they've got a chance to host a game if they can knock off Syracuse yesterday. So that, I got to imagine, from a coach's perspective, is just a really nice, exciting team to coach. Is that a fair, you know, kind of representation?
Well, Terry, thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's great. You know, this is a great 4-year group that we've had in our program since my beginnings here 4 years ago. We were able to get in as an at-large team in 2012, having beat Maryland in the regular season finale here at Andy Kerr, and then we were fortunate enough to make the tournament as an at-large, and, you know, on the backs of many of these guys, Matt Clarkson, Ryan Walsh, were some key components to what we were doing that year, as well as Peter Baum. So, you know, I'm proud of our guys. And to your other question, you know, as I would say to my team, it's not where you start, it's where you finish. And, you know, we thought we had a good club when we started this thing back in September, because we had so many veteran guys coming back, guys that I mentioned, Ryan Walsh, Matt Clarkson, and we were excited about our sophomore class that had played significantly as freshmen. You know, guys like Peter Donato, Peter Marchetto at the Faceoff X. We returned two very good defensemen in Leo Storrs and John Baker, and getting Matt Yeager back after injury in the senior class. So, you know, we thought we had a good club. We got off to a fast start in the first 4 games of the season, and then, you know, slipped a little bit in the middle 4, and then when we were able to kind of turn it on the tail end of March and into April, and we were able to ride that momentum into the Patriot League tournament. We got great play out of our players, you know, in the Friday-Sunday format that is the Patriot League tournament.
Well, now you got a little bit of an extra day to breathe. You're playing Sunday, 5:15 on ESPNU. Like I said, in Chapel Hill. What do you know about Joe Bresci's team?
I know that they're very athletic, you know, and we're fortunate that our defensive coordinator, Stephen Toomey, was the ops guy there a couple years ago. So, you know, he knows a lot of those guys and helped with the recruiting process of those guys, maybe not directly, but indirectly. So, you know, you start with their attack, and the two cornerstones in Sankey and Bitter, who are, you know, phenomenal Dodgers and great in the ride. And then they are very athletic in the midfield. Again, athletic defensively. Coach Bresci's always liked those long athletic defenders. So they'll press you in the middle of the field. I'm sure we'll see some 10-man ride, but again, we make a living in the Patriot League, so we're not averse to seeing the 10-man ride out of teams like Bucknell and Army and some of those folks. So they're a great team, and having watched them play, with enough lacrosse that's on television, some bus rides home for us where they had afternoon games, we've seen them play. I know we've had some similar conversations with them, and we've played some teams that they played. I know Stephen was on the phone back and forth with Chris Fipes in our preparations for Syracuse this week. So, we're excited. Anytime that you make it into the NCAA tournament, you're playing a quality opponent, and we know what the ACC is and what those teams stand for and what they mean to college lacrosse. So I think our guys are just excited for the opportunity to continue their 2015 season, and we'll get started on Carolina tomorrow.
What's this week of practice going to be like?
Just like last week, and just like the week of the Patriot League tournament. It's finals week for us, so we'll most likely, being a Sunday game, we're going to take tomorrow off. We'll get in the weight room for our guys, and we'll get into some film to put the Syracuse game to bed. But as far as the practice field is concerned, we'll take tomorrow off, and then we'll get back at it on Tuesday, and then we'll have a pretty normal week for us at this stage of the season. We're about an hour and a half, every day. So we'll start, there on Tuesday, and we'll go over the things that we need to go over, things that we need to be better at, that we struggled with against Syracuse, as we continue to hone our own skills. And then, by mid-afternoon on Tuesday, I'm sure we'll have a great feel for, what we think Carolina is going to do, and then we'll introduce that to our guys, and, we'll practice that all the way through Friday, which will be the end of finals, and hopefully, depending on travel and stuff like that, get out of here mid-afternoon on Friday, get down to North Carolina for a practice or two, and then be excited to play the game on Sunday.
You mentioned 2012. You went into an undefeated UMass program in Amherst on the AstroTurf and beat them 13-11. Is there anything that you can take away from that and kind of apply to this matchup as it relates to getting your team mentally ready to take on Carolina?
I think just the preparation that the guys went through. Again, we've got a senior class that were freshmen there, and they know what it's going to take to be prepared for it, especially during finals week, making sure that guys are getting the proper rest and preparing themselves, not only physically but mentally. But as far as going in, you're talking about two different teams. In terms of ourselves, I would probably, equate the two opponents very similarly in the fact that, UMass was, very athletic that year, had two great attackmen in Will Manny and Anthony Biscardi. Again, a solid stopper in the goal. In the McCormick boy, and two very good defensemen that I think are in the MLL right now, and again, a handful of athletic midfielders. But I think the similarities change there. Again, you're talking about a team that week in and week out plays an unbelievable schedule, the ACC schedule, and then their out of conference schedule as well. So I think for us, we can't worry too much about what Carolina is. We got to worry about, Colgate lacrosse playing our very best at this time of the year, and making sure that we're doing the things that we do well, and potentially looking at them and trying to find some cracks in the armor.
Mike Murphy, we really appreciate your time on the podcast. Good luck as you and your team prepare for North Carolina on Sunday, and we'll all be watching and looking forward to a great game.
All right, Terry, thanks for having me.
And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Yale head coach Andy Shea, whose Bulldogs are the Ivy League champions for the third time in 4 years, and will head to College Park 2:30 on Saturday to take on the Maryland Terrapins, a rematch of a regular season meeting in which the Elis won. Coach Shea, congratulations. There's something about the blue and white in the Ivy League tournament, isn't there?
Maybe. Last couple of years, I think we've, last 4 years, our guys just respond to the pressure a little bit, and I think they enjoy it.
What do you think it is about the personality of this team that has the capacity to, it seems, peak in May?
You know, we try and recruit kids that are, you know, really tough, and we try and make sure that it's a high priority. Not only that, but it's not just a token. Yeah, you know, the coaches say, yeah, he's tough, but they tell us a story about it, and that he's got a strong reputation for being that. So we think that the aggregate of that many tough kids helps you in critical situations.
And certainly well-deserved praise from the anchors on the ESPN Youth Selection Show. Another thing that I believe Quint said that resonated with me was your capacity to play a term that I like to use is two-handed, righty and lefty, which is fast and slow in this particular instance. And you know, one of the things that is well-established as it relates to Maryland is their reputation as their tempo is concerned. What's your expectation for this game as you guys prepare for a rematch?
Well, I think it all comes down to face-off, and we know that they are incredibly tough there. You know, and if whatever kind of matchup we get there, if we get the high-end team that's been killing teams with the X, which we are going to expect, then we're going to have to do other things to, you know, help us with possessions, maybe, you know, 10-man ride or zone or something like that, and see if we can, you know, offset that balance a little bit. I don't think sometimes you don't have a choice with the X. It's just the way it goes, and we got to be ready for that.
Another thing that came up on the selection show was just the physicality that your attack can play with. And as you look to, you know, an idea of how you're going to score goals against a Maryland defense that ranked number one in the country, what do you look to?
You know, we our guys had a decent. Had a decent time dodging the first time, but there was an element of surprise back then. It was, it was February, and you know, I think that we can't expect that. We have a tremendous amount of respect for their defense, and certainly their goalie, and we think is the very best in the country. So I think that we are going to do our best, but it's going to be a huge challenge. And you know, we definitely have no shortage of respect for what they can do on the defense side of the field. At the same time, we're going to have to play. So if they draw a line in the sand, our guys that normally dodge all the time are going to have to do it.
And then just to kind of end, you know, one of the things about this Maryland team is they know how to play in the postseason. They've been to championship weekend a handful of times under John Tillman. What do you tell your team in trying to get them in the right frame of mind to understand that? At the end of the day, you know, it's just two teams going out on the field. Maybe the Hoosiers, you know, the basket is 10 feet tall type of anecdote.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, the frame of mind that we have is that we're going to play one play at a time no matter what, whether it's a scrimmage or whether it's the first game of the year or the second game of the year, the Ivy League tournament or the NCAA tournament. So if we deviate from that, we're not going to be successful. We are convinced that focus on the outcome will paralyze you, you know, when it comes to doing your job. So we're not going to worry about that part of it. We're going to worry about doing our jobs individually. We're going to worry about doing it in small spaces, in small moments, in small plays, and expect that if we're supposed to win, that it'll work out for us.
Well, Andy Shea, we really appreciate your time on the podcast. We hope that you and your team have a moment to savor the accomplishment of getting to this point, back to the NCAA tournament yet again, before you turn your attention to Maryland and making sure that you're as well prepared as possible on Saturday.
Sure, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
And the Inside Lacrosse Selection Sunday podcast continues with High Point head coach John Torpy, whose Panthers are making their first NCAA tournament appearance in their third season, coming off of a double overtime victory over Richmond in the Southern Conference Championship. They take on the Towson Tigers Wednesday night in the playing game, and the winner advances to take on number one seed Notre Dame in South Bend on May 9th. Coach Torpy, first of all, have you caught your breath after the way that game unfolded against the Spiders?
Slowly I have. Yeah, that was an unbelievable game. And two really good teams. I mean, I said it after the game, but I give a lot of credit to Inter-Miami and his staff. Those guys have become the class of our conference here in just 2 years. Their record this year is remarkable. I think what their assistants do, what Dan does, is phenomenal. But yeah, it was a great game, and all credit goes to to just a good fought battle. I thought our seniors really dug in. We had some guys that we needed to step up in the second half. We played really well in the fourth quarter, and one of the things we wanted our guys to do is just play fearless. It's late in the season. We kind of know what we're doing. We kind of know what the other team's doing. And we needed those guys to step up, and they did. So we're just happy to have another opportunity to coach these guys.
And, that's one of the things that I feel like so many folks don't, when you get farther removed from the games, from playing, from coaching, from being a part of a team, you don't realize how enjoyable it is. Just the weather's nice. So you get pumped up to go out to practice because the stakes are higher. And so you get two more opportunities before you hit the field against Towson. Just how much it's hard to quantify excitement, but how excited are you for just the opportunity to hit the field one more time?
Oh, just thrilled. I mean, it's something that's even tough to put into words, but I just love our guys so much, and I've said that throughout the year. These are guys that built the program from scratch, guys that have been here for 4 years, 3 years, 2 years, guys that have been here for a year, and just the tight bond that we have right now, the way the seniors are bought in, the way they've gotten the other guys to buy in, has just been tremendous. And like I said, just to have another opportunity to coach these guys is fantastic. And it's chaotic, but at this point in the year, you got to love the chaos.
No doubt. I mean, that's really what it's all about. And you mentioned, obviously, the fact that it's a special moment. It's a special opportunity. You've got guys in your program who have been there since literally day one. Like, no exaggeration, literally day one. And, here they are with an opportunity to, play for a program-defining win. At what point, if at all, have you allowed yourself to just take a moment to reflect on the fact that what you were building toward, you've accomplished a hell of a lot of your goals?
I really haven't. And I'm sure at some point when the season's over, I'll be able to, sit down with our staff and hopefully have an opportunity to sit down with our seniors and just really thank those guys for, believing in our vision and buying into it and getting those around them to do so. But I mean, right now, all our focus is on just how we get better over the next couple of days. And, for us, we've made strides. I mean, at this point in the season, you think you kind of, have tapped out. You think you kind of know exactly what the limitations are for your team. But, with us, we've battled some injuries throughout the course of the season. And we just, through the fall, through the early part of the season, we talked about peaking at the right time and gotten some guys off the injured reserve here. And we're starting to do that. So I think, and I hope our team has only really scratched the surface on how good they can be.
You mentioned nitty-gritty, and really it's a proper way to describe Towson. It's a team that doesn't score a ton of goals. They play tough defense. They don't turn the ball over. How important is the performance of your faceoff specialist and, the guy like Jamie Peluso has been able to be a weapon for you at times, just to be able to set the tone, set the tempo, and try to, control possession in your own way?
It's important, but I think everything's important. I mean, I think every ground ball is important this late in the season, I think. What you do on your possessions, on both ends of the field, how your guys are able to, pick up a game plan in such a short amount of time and be able to, execute what you want to do, but also understand what the other team's doing. But, we're fortunate to have some really high-end guys like Jamie, Austin Geiser in the cage. We've got some very good attackmen. We've got some midfielders that have really kind of come into their own over the last couple of weeks. So, I like the way, I like the way our team is coming together as a whole.
My guy Cole Karn's one of those midfielders.
Cole had a great game. He had a little bit of a scoring drought, but he's got elite level speed, and he really went at his guy. He went at his guy against Richmond late in the game. He got a goal early in the game, and then had the game tying goal late in the game. And just I'm really proud of really the way some of our younger guys have stepped up, and he's definitely one of them.
So, you talk a little bit about just kind of how all the stakes are higher. Every play, every detail is magnified. To that end, it's difficult to turn around so quickly and feel comfortable heading into a playing game. But at the same time, this is a Towson team that you're very familiar with. You got your program's first win over, if I'm not mistaken. That's correct, right?
Yep.
And so, well, there's no doubt about that, but at the very least, history is still, I was a history major in college. I'd be remiss if I didn't, you know, kind of bring it up. But the point is, that how well do you know this team, and how prepared do you think you guys are going to be able to be for Wednesday?
We'll be prepared. I mean, I got a lot of respect for Sean Adelin. Just knowing him through the years, having played with him a little bit, and then Anthony being an Ohio State guy, and Dan Cacci, I think, is, you know, one of the great up and coming younger assistants. But we know these guys a little bit. I mean, we know these guys based on, you know, what we've seen a little bit so far. Got a chance to watch them play a little bit today on film. You know, kind of have some scouts from the last 2 years. It's nice to, I guess, be playing a team that you have a little bit of history with, that you know a little bit about. But you know, there's a lot of new parts there on all ends of the field for those guys. So it's going to be a lot of work that we have to do here over the next couple, you know, hours and days to kind of figure those guys out to the point where we can, you know, put the game plan into a simple form for our guys to be able to play at the top speed.
John Torpy, we really appreciate your time on the podcast. Good luck as you prepare for the quick turnaround, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
Thanks, Terry.
Inside the Cross Podcast.